Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Welcome to the Daily Jungle. Coming off a huge weekend of sports, and we are all over it. Another week in the NFL, another brutal injury, this time to Aaron Rodgers. The Packers now need to find a way to replace a guy who is absolutely irreplaceable. And Justin Turner goes legend. 29 years to the day after Kirk Gibson did the same thing in this town. Why the hell would Joe Maddon give John Lackey the ball? Three excellent guests today, Heath Evans of the NFL Network, Scott Brooks, the head coach of the Washington Wizards, and Tyler Kepner of the New York Times to talk some Major League playoff baseball. Alvy, it's a busy Monday. Get it? You know, generally, by the sixth week of the NFL season, you should have a pretty good idea of who's good, who's bad, who matters, and who ought to just give up right now. But not this year. Not when the Steelers get stomped by Jacksonville one week and then go into Arrowhead and beat Kansas City the next. Not when the allegedly tanking Jets were a bizarre replay ruling away from beating the defending Super Bowl champs. Not when Adrian Peterson gets traded to Arizona for a couple of footballs and he suddenly starts tearing it up. And not when the Giants lose every game and every receiver who matters, and then they go into Denver and they beat the Broncos. 6 weeks into this season, nobody knows Jack. Nobody knows anything. The only thing that you can know is that every week, somebody's going to get injured. And not just run-of-the-mill guys either. Huge names. David Johnson, Dalvin Cook, Julian Edelman, Odell Beckham Jr., J.J. Watt, Marcus Mariota, Derek Carr came back from a broken back. But Jameis Winston went out. Leonard Fournette picked up a foot injury yesterday. And then, of course, there's Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers and the play that took years off of the lives of Packer fans.
Snap to Rodgers. Steps up, scrambles right, buying time, dumps it off, and Bennett dropped it incomplete. He was wide open just outside the 50-yard line number on the right side. Another drop for Martellus
Aaron Rodgers
Bennett.
Slow to get up, Wayne.
And he's down. Rodgers down on his back near the 30-yard line. Now they've got him sitting up.
Come out on the field for an injured player.
Looked like it was Anthony Barr hitting him. And Aaron Rodgers just now getting up.
And if that shot from Aaron Rodgers or that shot that he took from Anthony Barr was bad, the tweet from the official Packers Twitter account was even worse. Quote, QB Aaron Rodgers suffered a broken collarbone. There's a chance he could miss the rest of the season. End quote. Hey, there's no sugarcoating this one. That is horrible. That's terrible. Randall Cobb said it best, quote, it's devastating. No question about it. First and foremost, it's one of my closest friends. So to see him go down with that is tough. But we've still got to play football. We've got a long season ahead of us, and we've got to figure out what we're going to do. End quote. It's absolutely brutal. For Rodgers, for the Packers, for the NFL. I know the league's unofficial motto is next man up. But you can't next man up Aaron Rodgers. There is no next man. Because as nice as Brett Hundley was at UCLA, he's not Aaron Rodgers. Nobody is. And the Packers are not the Packers without him. There isn't a single team in the NFL that needs their quarterback or is more reliant on their quarterback than the Packers are Aaron Rodgers. Nobody. Rodgers was the one who carried them through all the other injuries. And there were more injuries to come yesterday. Green Bay finished yesterday's loss to the Vikings without their starting quarterback and without 60% of their starting offensive line. Their secondary was already completely jacked up coming in. After the game, Clay Matthews said, quote, comical is not the right word. It's almost ridiculous because of the luck, the lack of luck we've had. Over the years, it seems like we've been hit by the injury bug, this year more than so many others. You can try and have a next man up mentality, but at the same time, there's only so many guys we can get in there, end quote. You see, the thing about Aaron Rodgers, when you've got him, you can get through almost any injury except an injury to Aaron Rodgers. And yes, I know the Packers did reach the playoffs the last time Rodgers missed time with an injury. A very similar injury, except it was on the other side, it was not his throwing arm, and they did it with guys like Seneca Wallace, Scott Tolzien, and Matt Flynn. So I'm not telling you Packer fans to give up on the season, but it sure as hell is not going to be easy. And it's kind of hard to keep the faith right now. So yes, I can see why Packer fans and Packer players were bent about that hit on Aaron Rodgers. Now, was that dirty? Was that cheap? I would say not. It was just really, really unfortunate. But I know why they're unhappy. Clay Matthews said, quote, I saw Aaron jawing at him. Aaron can take a hit and get up and respect it, but I'm sure he had a little something to say, and rightfully so. Brett Hundley was asked about it. And he added that he thought that Aaron didn't care for the hit either. Quote, I'm sure he didn't. Yeah, I mean, who would? End quote. I know the league office didn't like it. And again, terrible for the NFL that one big name after another is going down. Better put Tom Brady in bubble wrap and only break him out for games because between Odell, JJ, and Aaron, that's half the NFL commercials on the sideline right now. But it is football, and football is violent, and the guys playing it right now are bigger, faster, stronger than they were even a few years ago, and the collisions are that much more brutal. But you best believe there are people in the league office trying to see what, if anything, can be done about this, because a league of backups is not what anybody wants to see. This is a problem. It's definitely a problem for the NFL. But football is violent, so how do you fix that problem? 1-800-636-8686. And in Green Bay, it's got to be like a morgue right about now. Packer fan, if you want to call, share your thoughts on this. What did you think about that hit? How confident are you going forward? What's the general mood and vibe in Green Bay? Hey, listen, again, these guys, it's ingrained in every last one of them. Somebody goes down, somebody steps up, next man up, next man up. I'll say it one more time. You cannot next man up Aaron Rodgers. Listen to his coach, Mike McCarthy.
Stating the obvious, the loss of Aaron Rodgers to injury definitely hurts. But as a football team, we have to move forward. Aaron's a great player. He's a huge part of our success in our program. But this is the state of the National Football League. You have to deal with all your injuries.
Again, there's no quarterback in that league more important to their team than Aaron Rodgers is to Green Bay. That's such a hard thing to see. The guy's taken so many shots and always gotten right back up. He's so durable and he's so tough. It was a freak thing. You look at that hit and it didn't look like any other hit necessarily that he would have taken, but he was ridden into the ground right on his shoulder, collarbone, and it snapped. And again, he did break a collarbone a few years back, but it was on his non-throwing arm on the other side. So I'm not sure that this is the same as that. He didn't need surgery that time, and no word yet about this time. And then if you're the Packers, what do you do? Do you go with Brett Hundley, or do you go out there and try and bring somebody in? Heath Evans joins us. Heath, good morning. Good to have you back. How are you?
Hey, thanks for having me, buddy. I'm good. Another crazy NFL week. We still have no clue what's going on in our beautiful league, but greatest reality show on TV every single week, bud.
Heath, that is the truth, isn't it? You have no idea what's going to happen week to week. Let me first ask you this. As an analyst and a fan and somebody who played in that league for a decade, what was your reaction when you saw Anthony Barr hit Aaron Rodgers and then Rodgers leave the field on a cart?
Man, it's brutal. I mean, listen, I was blessed for my 10 years. I had one major knee injury, and that was about it. And I just think the league is better when our stars are happy and healthy. And I know it's an understatement, but there's an excitement that only Aaron brings to our game. And there is a craftiness and a leadership and an attitude. Sometimes some people don't like that attitude, but it makes our league better. And obviously one of the better teams in the league is now going to have to try to work some magic and win without maybe arguably the best quarterback to ever play the game.
Heath Evans joining us. Heath, do you have any issue with the hit?
You know, I don't. I always try to – what does the rule say, you know, that two-step mannerism? You know, I know Anthony well, and so you always try to say, well, let's not judge the intent of the player, but there's certain players. Jim, you've been around this business long enough to know there's certain players you can judge their intent before the whistle's ever blown. Anthony's not one of those guys, and so I think it was a great finish. You know, I think it's in the act of the play. And so I always try to rule cautiously on making a judgment call on someone's character to injure or maim some other player. And I definitely don't believe that was the case here.
Heath Evans, NFL Network analyst, joining us yet again. Now, Heath, if you're in that Packers locker room and you've seen Aaron Rodgers go down, how are you feeling? I mean, I understand next man up, always next man up.
Yeah.
But deep down, do you really believe that, or does it feel like your season may be over?
You know, I don't know. I go back to 2008, Kansas City Chiefs, week one, Patriots. You know, I'm our fullback, and we see Brady go down in the first quarter. That team, because of the leadership from ownership, head coaching, OC, DC, and then you can go the list of, you know, the boys as well as I do, between Vrabel and Brewski and Rodney Harrison, and I mean the list goes on and on of great leaderships, and we never blinked. We were able to pull off a win week one versus the Chiefs, and then literally Bill came in and sent Brady away for the rest of the season to go get his knee fixed and rehab, and we moved forward with Matt Castle, won 11 games, and every single week came up with a game plan to give us a chance to win. And I think if there's a reason that I'm excited about an injury, never about the injury, but you always get to see the great coaches. You get to see their genius come out when you lose a star like Aaron or Brady or some of the greats that we've seen go down in the past. So Mike McCarthy and his staff have a huge challenge ahead of them, but it's honestly an opportunity for them to display just to how gifted of coaches they are.
All right, so if you're Mike McCarthy, Heath, do you think that Brett Hundley's my guy? For instance, he said yesterday, Hundley is the next guy up. Do you think that you go with him and he's the guy, or is there somebody else out there that you might want to take a chance with that you go and you bring in?
Well, I think for that offense, I mean, people are always like, oh, this is a great spot for Colin Kaepernick. Well, I mean, Brett's been in that system now for 3 years, and you saw him do some good things yesterday despite being thrusted into the lineup. I've said there's two sides to the whole Colin Kaepernick story, and, you know, the truth is you really have to manipulate your offense if you're going to sign Colin to run a true pro-style NFL drop-back rhythmic offense, and that's what Mike McCarthy has always run with Aaron. And so it'd be a complete change of everything if you were going to sign a different quarterback. I think, as Mike said yesterday, you roll with the quarterback that you've drafted. You roll with the quarterback that Ted Thompson and the staff has tried to groom. But you change the mannerisms of the game plan to fit the differences between Aaron Rodgers. You know, I've often said, Bud, that, you know, this O-line gets a lot of credit that it doesn't deserve because of the greatness of Aaron. And, you know, there's a lot of greatness that we've seen out of Jordy Rodgers and Devontae Adams and the crew and Randall Cobb and so forth, even Ty Montgomery as a running back because of the greatness of Aaron Rodgers. And so now coaching is going to be at a premium to figure out what this quarterback can and can't do and then go manipulate the offense to adjust appropriately. And that's easier said than done. I've been a part of these type changes. We're going to see just how gifted the coaching staff is.
We're talking to Heath Evans, NFL Network analyst. He won a Super Bowl. He played 10 years in the NFL. You know, Heath, also to your point, it's not just Aaron Rodgers, and that's not good for the NFL. I mean, never mind Packer fans. I understand why they're upset, but for the entire league, you don't want to lose a star like that. But he's far from the only one. Rodgers, J.J. Watt, Odell Beckham Jr., Dalvin Cook,
yeah,
Julian Edelman, Marcus Mariota. The list goes on. Is it just bad luck, Heath, or is something else going on and something that could somehow potentially be changed? What do you do if you're the league? Can you do anything?
Well, listen, let me commend the league for effort in trying to protect the players. And I think we have backed off of football practice and contact too much in trying to win the war on concussions and head trauma. So I think the effort of the league, and not only from the verbal attempts to educate the world on what players go through, but really the money that they're consistently throwing behind trying to give us better equipment and do the research and such. But in the last CBA, we restricted physical access. We restricted the players' ability to run and jump and cut and get in physical shape. And some of these guys do it on their own in the offseason, of course, but you can't prepare for football unless you are playing football. No one's ever going to convince me that Le'Veon Bell staying out of camp didn't affect the offensive rhythm of the Pittsburgh Steelers this year. Thank God he's not hurt. But at the end of the day, Jim, you've got to be in this full-speed game day after day after day. And yes, it takes a wear and tear on your body, but that's also how you build up the war of attrition on your body to get your joints and everything ready to take the hits. It's why I encourage parents, start your kids playing football when they're 7, because when they're 7, they're hitting each other at 1 mile an hour, and then when they're 10, they're hitting each other at 4 miles an hour, and then if you wait till they're 14, they've never been hit a day in their life, and they're getting hit at 15 miles an hour. So you build a kid's body up, keep them hydrated, feed them well, prepare the body to take the abuse that the NFL season offers it. But the truth is, some of it's just unlucky hits. So we'll see. But I hate to see our stars go down. Heck, I hate to see any player go down. And I do think we can do a better job of preparing our players by the next CBA rolling around and readjusting the rules and letting our boys practice and prep more for the season.
So do we have it backwards? The idea in your mind is not to hit less, but to hit more?
Well, I think it's cautious hitting, you know. So I mean, listen, during the season, you get to put pads on once a week, you know, and I think, you know, I go to a lot of these practices and I talk to a lot of these coaches, and you know, it's a I don't want this to be the story of, oh, in my day, because, listen, I've only been retired 6 seasons, and so it's not all that much different. But they're, I just will say this. You see the mentally, physically, and tough teams at the end of the year, they always peak at the right time, you know? So we'll I do think starting off season back in March instead of April will help. I do think getting the guys extra OTAs, especially the young players that are coming from these college systems that don't really understand the NFL game. But I do think giving more time on the practice field, yes, would alleviate injuries.
Well, we're talking to Heath Evans. All right, Heath, to your other point that it's a toss-up right now, right? The Chiefs were the last undefeated team left. They lose to Pittsburgh. So has anybody separated themselves from the pack as a Super Bowl favorite, or is this a giant toss-up at this point?
I love it. It's a toss-up. You know, the things that we think we know get challenged every single week. And so I'm going to ride with what I've known during my 16 years of experience, is a little bit of what I just talked about. You know, who are the teams that at least they might have a bunch of mental blunders, but who are the teams that bring it every single week, you know, physically? You know, and I think if you look at the Eagles right now, that O-line, D-line dominance is something special. The Chiefs, I'll just consider that a blip on the radar last night. They have been something just absurdly special this year. And then, you know, we can kind of go down the list of teams that leave us questioning, and the Patriots being one of them. But I still think the Chiefs, when you look at a roster and you look at what they can offer you offensively, defensively, special teams, team speed, coaching, you know, I'm going to give them the nod as still the best team in the league right now. The Steelers just seem to have their number. I mean, going into that game, the last three games, Lev Bell had played them. He had put up 430 yards rushing on them. Big Ben was 6-1. The one game that he lost versus the Chiefs, he didn't even get to finish. So he was basically 6-0 when he got to finish a game versus the Chiefs. Sometimes teams just have your number, and you can't make sense of it. Last night, the Chiefs looked like a team in disarray in a lot of ways, but I'm sure they'll bounce back to life. I mean, the Raiders on a short week, they have utterly destroyed the Raiders in the years past. Derek Carr's yet to beat them when it matters, and we'll see what the Raiders have to offer them this week. I'll just keep it at that.
Can I reset this for you one more time? 29 years ago last night, Dodger Stadium witnessed history.
Sacks waiting on deck, but the game right now is at the plate. High fly ball into right field. She is gone!
That's Vince. Vince at the peak of his powers. What an amazing moment that was. That's a moment so iconic. You don't even need to describe it, or for me to describe it to you or recap it, it lives on in history. You know exactly what happened. You know what that was all about. I don't need to add any color to that, any kind of description, any background. We all know. We all know exactly what that represented. So it was perfectly appropriate that nearly three decades to the day, Justin Turner came to the plate in the bottom of the ninth of a 1-1 game. Two men on, two outs. He took a first pitch ball, and then this happened.
Turner with a fly ball to center field. It's way back at the wall. A three-run walk-off home run for Justin Turner. The Dodgers are up 2-0, and they are going crazy.
Good night now. Dodgers 4, Cubs 1. Dodgers up 2-0, heading back to Chicago. Thanks for coming. Yes, I understand it's only one game. Yes, all that did was hold home field. But the Cubs had a chance to rip it, and Turner would not let them. You think he enjoyed that moment very much?
I can't even put it into words right now. It's incredible, and the most important thing was obviously helping us get another win. You know, but that's something down the road, hopefully many, many years from now, I'll get to tell stories about.
So my man did everything but drop that Gibby fist pump around the bases. And I'll say this once, and you can either appreciate this right now or you can understand this some later point. Justin Turner is clutch as hell. I'm not sure at this point how many other guys in Major League Baseball that I would rather have up in that spot ahead of Justin Turner. This guy's now up to 22 postseason RBI, and he has 10 this season alone. He's 13 for 18 with runners in scoring position for his career in the postseason. Let me run that back one more time. 13 of 18 with runners in scoring position for his career in the postseason. Of course, he was going yard with two outs and two on last night. So the only questions were, what pitch and how far would that home run travel? Oh, wait, there was one more question. One more question. What the hell was John Lackey doing in that game? What was John Lackey doing in that game? And one more bonus question, where was Wade Davis? You remember Wade Davis. I ask because I'm not totally sure Cubs manager Joe Maddon does. You see, Wade Davis is the Cubs closer. He was the guy who was so brass in that clincher against the Nationals and got Bryce Harper to end that series. But he was nowhere to be found last night. But before we get into that, how about a moment for the thought pattern that allowed the Cubs to send three straight right-handed batters up to face Kenley Jansen in a tie game? The same Kenley Jansen who kills right-handed hitters to the tune of a .120 batting average. Just brainstorming here? Just spitballing here? I don't know, maybe you throw up a lefty pinch hitter? Maybe, especially when Anthony Rizzo got on base via hit-by-pitch? But Maddon didn't do that. Maddon rolled with the righties. And again, Joe Maddon is a brilliant guy. Joe Maddon has forgotten more about baseball than I would ever hope to know. But that was weird, right? Really weird. And still not nearly as weird as what happened in the bottom of the ninth. Yasiel Puig led off the inning with a walk. He advances to second on a sacrifice. Then Kyle Farmer strikes out. So now you've got two outs and a runner on second base. You could go with Wade Davis, who can't give you any more than an inning, and you'd prefer to keep him for a save situation. But at the same time, when you're on the road, if you give up a run here, you won't get to a save situation. But instead of going with the all-star closer, Joe Maddon goes with John Lackey. I get it. I really do. Because when you have a chance to get a guy with a grand total of three relief appearances in his entire career into a crucial moment in a playoff game, then you do it. Especially when that same guy, who's only made three career relief appearances, especially when that guy's pitching in back-to-back games for the first time in his career. And the only thing better than going with a guy who has never come out of the pen and is doing it on back-to-back days is doing it with a guy who led the National League in home runs allowed. Then it's a no-brainer. So you get him and his 36 home runs allowed this season and more than 300 in his career into that game. Every damn time, Joe. Every damn time. And you do it 7 days a week and twice on Sunday. And since yesterday was Sunday, I'm guessing that Maddon would have done it twice yesterday if he could have. And of course, Lackey walked the first guy he faced. Hey, I don't know, Joe. Maybe that's a warning sign. Maybe you do something right then and there and rip him out of the game. Yeah, I know it would have been a desperate move. But when you've got a gopher ball specialist going up against one of the most clutch hitters in all of baseball, maybe that's something you consider. But Maddon had his plan, and he worked his plan. And then Turner worked him and Lackey for a three-run jack and a 2-0 series lead. Let's not get this part twisted. The Dodgers are the better team. That's why they're up 2-0. That's why they're going to win this series. But Joe Maddon getting turned inside out by Dave Roberts and making some of his worst managerial moves at the worst possible time certainly isn't helping anybody. What a disaster for the Cubs. Justin Turner is absolutely incredible. That was truly an iconic LA moment. Heath Evans joins us. Heath, good morning. Good to have you back. How are you?
Hey, thanks for having me, buddy. I'm good. Another crazy NFL week. We still have no clue what's going on our beautiful league, but greatest reality show on TV every single week, bud.
Heath, that is the truth, isn't it? You have no idea what's going to happen week to week. Let me first ask you this. As an analyst and a fan and somebody who played in that league for a decade, what was your reaction when you saw Anthony Barr hit Aaron Rodgers and then Rodgers leave the field on a cart?
Man, it's brutal. I mean, listen, I was blessed for my 10 years. I had one major knee injury, and that was about it. And I just think the league is better when our stars are – are happy and healthy. And I know it's an understatement, but there's an excitement that, only Aaron brings to our game. And there is a craftiness and a leadership and an attitude. Sometimes some people don't like that attitude, but it makes our league better. And obviously one of the better teams in the league is now going to have to try to work some magic and win without maybe arguably the best quarterback to ever play the game.
Heath Evans joining us. Heath, do you have any issue with the hit?
You know, I don't. I always try to – what does the rule say, you know, that two-step mannerism? You know, I know Anthony well, and so you always try to say, well, let's not judge the intent of the player, but there's certain players. Jim, you've been around this business long enough to know there's certain players you can judge their intent before the whistle's ever blown. Anthony's not one of those guys, and so I think it was a great finish. You know, I think it's in the act of the play. And so I always try to rule cautiously on making a judgment call on someone's character to injure or maim some other player. And I definitely don't believe that was the case here.
Heath Evans, NFL Network analyst, joining us yet again. Now, Heath, if you're in that Packers locker room and you've seen Aaron Rodgers go down, how are you feeling? I mean, I understand next man up, always next man up.
Yeah.
But deep down, do you really believe that, or does it feel like your season may be over?
You know, I don't know. I go back to 2008, Kansas City Chiefs, week one, Patriots. You know, I'm our fullback, and we see Brady go down in the first quarter. That team, because of the leadership from ownership, head coaching, OC, DC, and then you can go the list of, you know, the boys as well as I do, between Vrabel and Brewski and Rodney Harrison, and, I mean, the list goes on and on of great leaderships, and we never blinked. We were able to pull off a win week one versus the Chiefs, and then literally, Bill came in and sent Brady away for the rest of the season to go get his knee fixed in rehab, and we moved forward with Matt Castle, won 11 games, and every single week came up with a game plan to give us a chance to win. And I think if there's a reason that I'm excited about an injury, never about the injury, but you always get to see the great coaches. You get to see their genius come out when you lose a star like Aaron or Brady or some of the greats that we've seen go down in the past. So Mike McCarthy and his staff have a huge challenge ahead of them, but it's honestly an opportunity for them to display just to how gifted of coaches they are.
All right, so if you're Mike McCarthy, Heath, do you think that Brett Hundley's my guy? For instance, he said yesterday, Hundley is the next guy up. Do you think that you go with him and he's the guy, or is there somebody else out there that you might want to take a chance with that you go and you bring in?
Well, I think for that offense, I mean, people are always like, oh, this is a great spot for Colin Kaepernick. Well, I mean, Brett's been in that system now for 3 years, and you saw him do some good things yesterday despite being thrusted into the lineup. I've said there's two sides to the whole Colin Kaepernick story, and, you know, the truth is you really have to manipulate your offense if you're going to sign Colin to run a true pro-style NFL drop-back rhythmic offense, and that's what Mike McCarthy has always run with Aaron. So it'd be a complete change of everything if you were going to sign a different quarterback. I think, as Mike said yesterday, you roll with the quarterback that you've drafted. You roll with the quarterback that Ted Thompson and the staff has tried to groom. But you change the mannerisms of the game plan to fit the differences between Aaron Rodgers. You know, I've often said, Bud, that, you know, this O-line gets a lot of credit that it doesn't deserve because of the greatness of Aaron. And, you know, there's a lot of greatness that we've seen out of Jordy Rodgers and Devontae Adams and the crew and Randall Cobb and so forth, even Ty Montgomery as a running back because of the greatness of Aaron Rodgers. And so now coaching is going to be at a premium to figure out what this quarterback can and can't do and then go manipulate the offense to adjust appropriately. And that's easier said than done. I've been a part of these type changes. We're going to see just how gifted the coaching staff is.
We're talking to Heath Evans, NFL Network analyst. He won a Super Bowl. He played 10 years in the NFL. You know, Heath, also to your point, it's not just Aaron Rodgers, and that's not good for the NFL. I mean, never mind Packer fans. I understand why they're upset, but for the entire league, you don't want to lose a star like that. But he's far from the only one. Rodgers, J.J. Watt, Odell Beckham Jr., Dalvin Cook,
yeah,
Julian Edelman, Marcus Mariota. The list goes on. Is it just bad luck, Heath, or is something else going on and something that could somehow potentially be changed? What do you do if you're the league? Can you do anything?
Well, listen, let me commend the league for effort in trying to protect the players. And I think we have backed off of football practice and contact too much in trying to win the war on concussions and head trauma. So I think the effort of the league, and not only from the verbal attempts to educate the world on what players go through, but really the money that they're consistently throwing behind trying to give us better equipment and do the research and such. But But in the last CBA, we restricted physical access. We restricted the player's ability to run and jump and cut and get in physical shape. And some of these guys do it on their own in the offseason, of course, but you can't prepare for football unless you are playing football. No one's ever going to convince me that Le'Veon Bell staying out of camp didn't affect the offensive rhythm of the Pittsburgh Steelers this year. Thank God he's not hurt. But at the end of the day, Jim, you've got to be in this full-speed game day after day after day. And yes, it takes a wear and tear on your body, but that's also how you build up the war of attrition on your body to get your joints and everything ready to take the hits. It's why I encourage parents, start your kids playing football when they're 7, because when they're 7, they're hitting each other at 1 mile an hour, and then when they're 10, they're hitting each other at 4 miles an hour, and then if you wait till they're 14, they've never been hit a day in their life, and they're getting hit at 15 miles an hour. So you build a kid's body up, keep them hydrated, feed them well, prepare the body to take the abuse that the NFL season offers it. But the truth is, some of it's just unlucky hits. So we'll see. But I hate to see our stars go down. Heck, I hate to see any player go down. And I do think we can do a better job of preparing our players by the next CBA rolling around and readjusting the rules and letting our boys practice and prep more for the season.
So do we have it backwards? The idea in your mind is not to hit less, but to hit more?
Well, I think it's cautious hitting, you know. So I mean, listen, during the season, you get to put pads on once a week, you know. And I think, you know, I go to a lot of these practices and I talk to a lot of these coaches, and you know, I don't want this to be the story of, in my day, because listen, I've only been retired 6 seasons, and so it's not all that much different. But I just will say this: you see the mentally, physically, and tough teams at the end of the year; they always peak at the right time, you know. So we'll. I do think starting off season back in March instead of April will help. I do think getting the guys extra OTAs, especially the young players that are coming from these college systems that don't really understand the NFL game. But I do think giving more time on the practice field, yes, would alleviate injuries.
Well, we're talking to Heath Evans. All right, Heath, to your other point that it's a toss-up right now, right? The Chiefs were the last undefeated team left. They lose to Pittsburgh. So has anybody separated themselves from the pack as a Super Bowl favorite, or is this a giant toss-up at this point?
I love it. It's a toss-up. You know, the things that we think we know get challenged every single week. And so I'm going to ride with what I've known during my 16 years of experience, is a little bit of what I just talked about. You know, who are the teams that at least they might have a bunch of mental blunders, but who are the teams that bring it every single week, you know, physically? You know, and I think if you look at the Eagles right now, that O-line, D-line dominance is something special. The Chiefs, I'll just consider that a blip on the radar last night. They have been something just absurdly special this year. And then, you know, we can kind of go down the list of teams that leave us questioning, and the Patriots being one of them. But I still think the Chiefs, when you look at a roster and you look at what they can offer you offensively, defensively, special teams, team speed, coaching, you know, I'm going to give them the nod as still the best team in the league right now. The Steelers just seem to have their number. I mean, going into that game, the last 3 games, Lev Bell had played them. He had put up 430 yards rushing on them. Big Ben was 6-1. The one game that he lost versus the Chiefs, he didn't even get to finish. So he was basically 6-0 when he got to finish a game versus the Chiefs. Sometimes teams just have your number, and you can't make sense of it. Last night, the Chiefs looked like a team in disarray in a lot of ways, but I'm sure they'll bounce back to life. I mean, the Raiders on a short week, they have utterly destroyed the Raiders in the years past. Derek Carr's yet to beat them when it matters, and we'll see what the Raiders have to offer them this week. I'll just keep it at that.
Tyler Kepner is back. Tyler, thanks for staying in the game with me. What's up? How you doing?
Yeah, thanks for giving me another try, man.
Yeah, you sound good right now. All right, so before I ask you about the ALCS, you had started to talk about Joe Maddon, but let me ask you this. When you see Justin Turner hitting a walk-off homer on the 29th anniversary of Kirk Gibson hitting his walk-off homer, do you start to think that there might be a little bit of magic with this Dodgers team?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I believe in that stuff. At least I love pointing it out, and that was unmistakable last night. I mean, the symmetry there. The fact they haven't made the World Series in so long since that Gibson year, and to have a moment like that at home was really pretty remarkable. So, I mean, I've been watching the Astros series up close, and they look pretty good too. But, yeah, the Dodgers seem to have something really special happening out there.
Tyler Kepner joining us. All right, so let's go back to the division series between the Yankees and the Indians. What did you make of how the Yankees responded to the challenge that they faced when they were down 2-0 and there was talk possibly about the end of Joe Girardi?
Yeah, it was pretty cool to see from their perspective how they came up from the canvas. I mean, Girardi was taking a real beating. He finally, you know, belatedly took the yeah, took the heat for it, took the blame for it. But you know, they to me, Jim, this is the free year that you get. You know, you don't get this much with the Yankees. You know, once you start winning in New York, there's that expectation that you should win every year, and that anything less is unacceptable. I think if they had just lost a playoff series to a really good Cleveland team, people would have still said, you know, it was a good year, something to build off. So they're kind of here house money, I think. You know, I don't think anybody really expected them to get to the ALCS this year. And to do what they did, even if they get swept this series, is a great, great season and, you know, something to really build on.
All right, so they're way ahead of schedule, and they come into this series with a lot of momentum, but then they run right into Dallas Keuchel and Justin Verlander in the first two games. What do you make of how those two pitchers showed up and then how the Yankee hitters dealt with them?
Yeah, I love how they showed up that way, because this has been the postseason otherwise, really, of you know, the relief pitcher. And the first sign of danger, first sign of trouble, teams are going to their bullpen. And the Astro pitchers, Keuchel and Verlander, were like old-time aces. You know, they were mixing and matching. I mean, Verlander had that three-pitch mix working, and Keuchel just had those two-seamers all day, and the Yankees didn't know what to do with them. So, you know, Judge in particular has been getting off-speeded to death. All postseason, really, since the Twins game. But yeah, it was really nice, as someone who loves baseball and loves great pitching, to see Verlander and Keuchel pitching like the old aces used to.
Tyler Kepner joining us. Not only that, but Verlander threw 124 pitches in a complete game win, struck out 13. So when you talk about this being the time of the relief pitcher, is it a matter of starting pitchers not being able to throw like that, like they used to, or is it just managers not wanting to take any risk because there's so much at stake in every postseason inning and every postseason at bat?
I think it's a combination. It's also the fact that these starters are not asked to go that deep run up the kind of innings they used to. So really, I mean, you have fewer 200 inning pitchers this year than ever before in a non-strike year. You only had 15 of them. So you just don't have a lot of guys who are used to the grind of getting through an order three or four times in a game. And so you get to October, they've already had, you know, 6 months of wear on that arm. They're a little burned out, and you've got this big inventory of relief pitchers who throw really hard and have really good stuff now. They can just blow it out for an inning. So I think managers, you know, the data will tell them third, fourth time through the order is a bad gamble when you got a fresh electric arm in the pen.
All right, so let's talk about the Astros, who you mentioned. The fact that we're talking about them holding a 2-0 series lead over the Yankees in the ALCS is pretty incredible when you think only a couple of years back, and they had three straight losing seasons with at least 106 losses from 2011 to 2013. They still lost 92 games in 2014. How did they get from there to here so quickly?
Yeah, I did a story about that today, actually, and this is all part of the plan. I mean, they recognize, you know, Jeff Luhnow came in. His first year was 2012 when they started a new CBA, and that greatly incentivized losing and, you know, gave the teams that lost the most money a lot more revenue to spend on amateur talent. Jeff had built up his chops in baseball kind of as an outsider coming to the Cardinals and finding a lot of good talent in the draft. And what he was able to do was, you know, make some really smart picks and spread around the money. For example, the first year he had Carlos Correa as the number one pick. Correa was not expecting to go number one, so he took less, and they could apply the savings to Lance McCullers, who's been really good, and a guy named Rio Ruiz, who they traded for Evan Gattis. They did it again a couple years later, you know, with Alex Bregman, and getting a guy, Daz Cameron, who they traded for Justin Verlander. Now, in between, they had a couple of number one picks that didn't work out, but they were smart enough to get out of those bad ideas early. They traded Mark Appel in the Ken Giles deal. And when Brady Aiken, who they took number one overall, came down to be injured, that changed the equation for him, and they decided to go number two overall the next year and get Bregman. So when things have not gone well, to the Astros' credit, they've been able to to take a different approach and seize the moment and know that they can't keep all these young players. They might as well trade them for big guys when the time is right, and the time certainly is right now.
Tyler Kepner covers Major League Baseball for the New York Times. Now, you mentioned so many really talented guys. It's hard really to pick one to talk about, but Jose Altuve is something truly special. You've covered this game for a long time. You've been a fan even longer. Have you ever seen anybody quite like him before?
Not really. Certainly not at his size, but to his credit, he's that's not even the first thing you think about anymore. You just think about how good he is. You know, the bat, the contact skill, the hard contact that he makes, leading the league in hits 4 years in a row is not something we're used to seeing. He's got power. He can run. He's good in the field. I mean, he really does everything well. And that's a credit, really. That was a guy Luno and those guys took over, they did have Altuve and Keuchel and Springer in the pipeline. They helped develop them, certainly. But those were guys who came in under Ed Wade's watch before, and that shouldn't be forgotten either. But, no, Altuve is just terrific. He does so many things well. And the more you watch him, the more you realize that even though I had said in print that Judge was probably the MVP, I think the wiser choice would have been Altuve, and I think he's going to get it.
Huh. All right, so of the four teams remaining, who do you think has got the best chance of winning it all?
Well, that's the question. My instinct is to say the Astros because I've seen them more recently. I mean, I saw the Dodgers a bunch of times during the year, but not in October. You pin me down, I would probably say the Dodgers, just the way their overall bullpen is working. I still believe in Kershaw. I think he's got a big game or two in him in the postseason. And Hill and those guys. I mean, I think the depth of their pitching is probably a little better than the depth of the Astros, because we've seen the best of the Astros. We've seen basically 16 of these 18 innings thrown by two of the best pitchers in the game. When they get to the rest of the staff, I think there's a little bit more of a drop off than there is with the Dodgers. So I love the Astros story, but I think I'll have to say the Dodgers.
My man, Raider Mike, this time in Oakland. Mike, good morning, brother. What's up? How are you?
What's up is my blood pressure, but thanks for taking the call, Vance Mack. You know, first of all, we landed Friday at Oakland Airport, and I want to start this call by saying the haze and the smoke in the air was pretty damn thick. They were talking about moving the game, but by yesterday, it had really cleared up considerably around the bay. Props to the hot shots up in the wine country fighting the flames. You know, Jim, I ran into Marty from NorCal's game yesterday. His house is in Santa Rosa is mere miles from entire neighborhoods that went up. You know, and honestly, my man, I feel more than a little foolish talking football amidst the devastation. But I owe it to the jungle to take my lumps. This will be quick. You know, a Raiders blogger back in January named Johnny Pham, a good friend of mine, was asking if this would be the same offense under Todd Downing. You know, it's evident now they fired the wrong damn coordinator. The Raiders have gone from 6th in the league to 30th in total offense. It's gone from explosive to nickel and dime. Carr has the fewest completions, 3, and the fewest attempts, 10, on deep passes than any QB in the league with an average distance of 4.6 yards per completion. Jim, you couple that with a 38% third down percentage, and man, that is all she wrote. They're 31st in the NFL in time of possession, last in first downs per game, and you cannot saddle the Raiders defense with that. You know, Norton's group has played well, but tight ends and running backs out of the backfield have killed them this year. Yesterday, Hunter Henry and Melvin Gordon lit them up with 14 receptions for 157 yards and a touch, with Henry doing huge damage in the last minute. Jim, I'll be back out here Thursday. You know, forecast is calling for rain. I hope it friggin' monsoons. They need it all up north. You know, Andy Reid, he doesn't need a bye week for this one. Get ready, Jack. The Kool-Aid man is coming in dry. That's all I got.
My man, Raider Mike, this time in Oakland. Mike, good morning, brother. What's up? How are you?
What's up is my blood pressure, but thanks for taking the call, Vance Mack. You know, first of all, we landed Friday at Oakland Airport. And I want to start this call by saying the haze and the smoke in the air was pretty damn thick. They were talking about moving the game, but by yesterday, it had really cleared up considerably around the bay. Props to the hot shots up in the wine country fighting the flames. You know, Jim, I ran into Marty from NorCal's game yesterday. His house is in Santa Rosa is mere miles from entire neighborhoods that went up. You know, and honestly, my man, I feel more than a little foolish talking football amidst the devastation. But I owe it to the jungle to take my lumps. This will be quick. You know, a Raiders blogger back in January named Johnny Pham, a good friend of mine, was asking if this would be the same offense under Todd Downing. You know, it's evident now they fired the wrong damn coordinator. The Raiders have gone from 6th in the league to 30th in total offense. It's gone from explosive to nickel and dime. Carr has the fewest completions, 3, and the fewest attempts, 10, on deep passes than any QB in the league with an average distance of 4.6 yards per completion. Jim, you couple that with a 38% third down percentage, and man, that is all she wrote. They're 31st in the NFL in time of possession, last in first downs per game, and you cannot saddle the Raiders defense with that. You know, Norton's group has played well, but tight ends and running backs out of the backfield have killed them this year. Yesterday, Hunter Henry and Melvin Gordon lit them up with 14 receptions for 157 yards and a touch, with Henry doing huge damage in the last minute. Jim, I'll be back out here Thursday. You know, forecast is calling for rain. I hope it friggin' monsoons. They need it all up north. You know, Andy Reid, he doesn't need a bye week for this one. Get ready, Jack. The Kool-Aid man is coming in dry. That's all I got.
Clones, thank you very much for listening. As always, another Jim Rome podcast drops tomorrow. Be on the lookout for that. Also, a major Jungle announcement coming up sometime this week. Be sure you listen for that. Check back tomorrow. See you then. We're out.